7 minutes after 7 o'clock. Thank you, Beth. Thank you, Dave. We have a guest joining us right now. I believe he's still in Texas, where he now resides. Former California Assemblyman Chuck DeVore is here. Good morning, Chuck. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Phil.
We had Chuck DeVore on the air here. Gosh, Chuck, it's been about a year ago now when after you had written The Texas Model, and we talked about that. He wrote a book called The Texas Model. I'm trying to remember it now, Lessons for Prosperity, essentially, and how what they're doing in Texas could serve as a model for the rest of the country. And you're at it again. We here in California are now in the throes of realignment. We have overcrowded our prison system. The feds have told us we got to stop it. We are at a loss as to what to do, and if I understand correctly, you're going to be out here testifying before our legislature about what you're doing in Texas. Is that right?
That's correct. I'm flying out at O'Dark 100 Thursday morning, and I'll be testifying mid-morning on Thursday about kind of the lessons learned of Texas's criminal justice reforms, and try to give some recommendations or at least some alternative options for the lawmakers in California.
How parallel were the situations in Texas and California?
Well, not very parallel, and that's part of the challenge with California. In Texas, you had budgetary pressures that drove the legislature on its own to reevaluate its criminal justice system. Texas had locked up about the second highest proportion of its population in the country. It's now down to fifth. But they didn't have an overcrowding problem. What they had were fiscally conservative lawmakers that were like, do we really want to spend all this money, and are there more effective ways to achieve public safety? And so they basically did a top-to-bottom analysis and determined that with certain nonviolent offenders, if you put more money into monitoring and rehab and treatment and follow-up, that you can dramatically reduce the recidivism rate. That's the rate at which people reoffend and get back into the criminal justice system. And if you help folks who've been, who've had an encounter with the criminal justice system get employed, that they're far less likely to reoffend. And so it was driven bipartisan, bicameral, both houses, the legislature and with Governor Perry, and they've revisited it now three sessions in a row, so they keep redoing it and keep improving it. Now, in California, it was driven by the federal courts. So you have a bunch of judges at the federal level responding to a lawsuit saying that we have cruel and unusual punishment in California because of overcrowding. And so it's basically forced the legislature's hand. And as a result, I think that California is in for some potential challenges because, the whole reform process was pushed from the outside.
Well, and we have talked to Sacramento County Sheriff Scott Jones about this before, and they're feeling it all the way down at the county jail level, where the only way to solve the problem from the federal perspective is you can't have your prisons this crowded, so we've got to cut some people loose. Chuck, we have talked and talked and talked in criminal justice policy about recidivism rates and how to rehabilitate prisoners so that they don't come back. What are you doing differently in Texas than they're doing elsewhere, or is it just a matter of allocating the resources and making the effort?
Well, a lot of it has to do with allocating resources. I mean, here's one huge difference, though, is that in Texas, to be very clear, no penalties were reduced for any offenses. In fact, sentences were lengthened for sex offenses against children and for repeat auto burglary. And rules for parole were also not reduced. In other words, back in 1990, about 28% of people were eligible for parole, today, 28%. And back in 1990, 79%. So actually less people are eligible for parole in Texas. And yet the crime rate here is dropping more rapidly than it is nationally. And the costs are going down. And Texas has now shut down three prisons. They've actually closed three prisons, even while the state is one of the most rapidly growing states in the country. So the big difference is what Texas figured out was that when you divert people from going to prison, these are nonviolent offenders, and you help them with rehab, and you follow up, you monitor them, you have swift, ensure incremental sanctions. So if they violate any of the conditions of their probation, for example, they have immediate punishment, like having to wear a GPS bracelet. What you find is that those individuals are far less likely to become more serious offenders and less likely to be essentially graduate into becoming serious criminals. But you've got to spend a little bit of money. And the challenge is that the little bit of money you spend is a lot less than incarceration in a prison, but that money is spent at the local level, at the county level. And so the challenge is, if you're a county, right, how much are you going to spend if you send an inmate to the state prison? You don't have to spend anything. But if you keep them locally, you're going to have to spend some money, albeit a lot less than the taxpayers send if you send the person to prison. So how do you address these fiscal incentives, right, between the county and the state, where the county's like, you know, we don't have the money to do this, send them to the state. You know, it ends up costing the taxpayer 10 times more, and the person's more likely to reoffend. But it's not easy, especially when you have federal courts breathing down your neck trying to get you to reduce your population.
Now, I have to be honest with you, when I read this, what you had just mentioned a few minutes ago, that you not only had, while crime rates were going down in Texas, you managed to close three prisons. Chuck, we need to open three here. We are so overcrowded. And you also alluded to trying to get offenders to not become more serious offenders. Has most of the success been in targeting lower level offenders before they get bad?
Absolutely. What you want to do is you want to prevent someone from becoming a serious criminal. And what happens many times with drug dependency is the being on drugs creates this craving for the drug, which then creates the need to go off and rob to pay for your habit. And once that person then gets into the system and interacts with more hardened criminals who may teach them how to be a better criminal, now you've lost that person. In all likelihood, that person is going to become increasingly unemployable and more costly to the taxpayer. So how do you prevent that person from spiraling down? And how do you, keep their family intact, keep a relationship with their children, and increase the odds of them being a productive taxpayer? And I'll tell you, one of the things that really shocked me when I was doing my research comparing the two states, and some of this just has to do with Texas's stronger economy than is the case in California, but you look at the number of criminals who have a job, you know, people who are out on parole, and what you see is that some 65%, in other words, 2 in 3 of Texas parolees are employed. But in contrast, only 1 in 5 California parolees are employed, right? So that's about a 3-to-1 difference. In other words, the likelihood of someone in Texas who's a parolee having a job is 3 times greater than their counterpart in California.
Wow.
And clearly this impacts recidivism. You know, how can we, I mean, it's kind of tough to expect a person to stay out of a life of crime if they can't even get a job.
Well, shoot, even non-criminals can't find jobs out here. I mean, and that was going to be my next question, and this ties in again to the Texas model, your book that you wrote last year. If we're going to employ these people, how critical is it that we have a thriving economy?
Well, it's very important to have a thriving economy, but it's also important that we don't erect governmental barriers against work with things like licensing requirements that really have little to do with the safety of a consumer and everything to do with cartels of people who don't want more competition. And you see that with things like licensing for cosmetology or for a plumber or a carpenter or whatever the licensing is. Licensure requirements often serve as a bar to people who have a nonviolent offense in their background, and they can't even, you know, even if they know how to, let's say, be a welder. In some instances, in many states, they can't even get a license to do the job. And so we have to be careful that the government isn't also then erecting barriers to work as well.
I'm glad you brought this up, because it is a nightmare here in California, the system of professional licensing. Is that considerably more lax in the state of Texas?
It's not considerably more lax, but we at the Texas Public Policy Foundation have been fighting it and have been trying to roll it back or prevent new licensing. For example, there was a push in the last legislative session to have licensure for roofers. And we pushed it back and stopped it from going through. So, you know, you always have professional and trade groups who will always come up with a great excuse for why they need licensure and government approval, and then rules and regulations and standards to keep people out of that profession.
Well, invariably it's about, crushing your competition.
Absolutely it is, and drying up supplies so cost goes up.
It seems to me, and it's kind of surprising to hear, that this push toward rehabilitation is coming from the state of Texas. Chuck, this sounds like a program that our Democratic legislature here in Sacramento would eat up with a spoon and a straw.
Right. And again, let's go back to what I said before. No penalties were reduced in Texas, even while we've had this success. And that's very different from some of the proposals on the table in Sacramento. But the program that we're part of here in the Texas Public Policy Foundation is called Right on Crime, and it's obviously a double entendre. Right is in it's the right thing to do, and right is in it's not left. And it's a national program. It's in about half the states where we've gone and testified and pushed for criminal justice reforms. And what's happened is kind of like an only Nixon can go to China thing, because Texas has such a tough on crime reputation that when legislators in other states, both conservative and liberal, hear that rough and tough Texas has enacted some of the most sweeping reforms in criminal justice in America, it kind of makes it safe to at least consider reforms in these other states, because they're like, gee, well, if the Texans did it, you know, it can't be that bad.
Isn't it silly the way individual states are not just competing for business or for residents, they're competing for image now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's politics, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, I'm looking forward to coming out to California on Thursday morning and testifying, and something like, you know, 14 of the 16 members of the Budget Committee are folks I work with in the State Assembly, and perhaps there'll be a few things that we did in Texas that they can apply to California and reduce the crime rate and maybe even reduce some of these high costs for the criminal justice system.
Hey, recidivism is an expense, or I should say incarceration is an expensive proposition, as we have learned out here in this state all too well. Chuck DeVore, best of luck on Thursday. We will be closely watching how that goes, and we'll see what happens with our Democratic legislature. But this all sounds like something that I think they would find most palatable.
Thanks so much, Phil.
I appreciate it, Chuck. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, Chuck DeVore of the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Be here on Thursday talking to the California legislature. We'll see if they pay any attention. AM 1380, The Answer. More to come on the Phil Cowan Show right after this.